Hi, this is David Orlovsky, and welcome back to the Robert Orlovsky Show. Whether you watch it with our friends over at Turning Time, or wherever you watch or listen to your podcast, as always, it's so nice to have you along as we are well into our sixth year of the podcast. Gadzooks. Somebody sent me an email. It wasn't in the question and answer. It was sent to me directly. It says, you know, you keep making reference to this Rabbi Sitter. Why don't you, actually discuss that? And I had Dan Roth, who runs Torah Live and produces all the Rabbi Sitter on a previous episode. So you can go look that up if you like. And we'll put the link in there for you if you want to look it up. But we've done a lot of stuff. My gosh. Yeah. So yeah, it's an amazing thing. I was just flipping through some old emails that I got, and someone had sent me a video of their child watching the episode with Rabbi Fogelgarn, him and his boys were singing the "Yes, this is a big deal. Every Friday night is a right Shabbos angels," and you see this little kid just watching the video, dancing along with it. We've done a lot. We've done a lot of stuff. So yeah, very nice. So Baruch Hashem, welcome along. Now we have a sponsor of this episode. Hi, Rabbi. Thank you for sharing Divrei Torah in a way that makes it accessible and enjoyable for everyone. Someone asked me once, why are your shiurim so entertaining? And I said, because otherwise I will get bored in the middle. It's not that I'm such a good speaker. I'm such a poor listener. I have no patience to sit through speeches. That's why, you know, I don't do well on panels because, you know, I have to sit there and listen to everybody else, and it's hard for me. I have ADD and stuff, you know. So I know that if I don't keep it interesting, I will get distracted in the middle of my speech and just wander off. So I got to try to keep it well. So I'm glad you appreciate it. We are sponsoring this episode in honor of my parents' 37th anniversary. Mazel tov. There was a time when that sounded pretty old to me, but of course, my wife and I have already passed 40, so, but it's quite a milestone. And Le'ilei Nishmas Ben Sion Michoel Ben Baruch Shimon, the Neshama Shevin Aliyah. Hope to see you at the wedding, Nami and Shemi. Baruch Hashem. This is obviously an old one because they're married now. Baruch Hashem. And they should go and build an emissa bayis Naman B'Yisrael. Such a schus to be able to participate. And Me'inyin Le'inyin Ba'isa'inyin. We'll talk about simchas. I want to share a personal idea in this episode, if you will indulge me. And it's interesting. There's somebody who's trying to help me promote the podcast, because it's a pity that this is probably one of the most effective things out there, in my opinion, my own humble opinion. And I just repeat what I hear, you know. And we have a relatively small viewership compared to other podcasts. And every now and then I meet people who say to me, I listen to your shiurim. I didn't even know you had a podcast. So we're going to try to figure out ways to get out there. So he gave a suggestion of trying to take some hot button topics so that might attract the people by the titles. Yeah. But the real, you know, base, well, basically listen to almost anything I have to say. Because it doesn't really matter what I'm saying. It's just the way I say it that makes it interesting, you know. Or Shaya Cohen, who's one of the major Machanchim and Mashbiim of our generation. Many years ago, over 30 years ago, I had done a shiur on platonic relationships. I don't know if shiur is the right word for it, but I did a talk about platonic relationships. And someone played it for him, and he says, well, I've been saying these things for years, just not as well. So that's what I try to do. I try to present whatever I'm saying in a way that hopefully will be meaningful to people. So I'm sharing a personal thing because this week I am going to be celebrating my grandson, Yaakov Lieberman's bar mitzvah. What a beautiful simcha. And this is meaningful to me on a very special level because that means it'll be easier for me to make a mezumen. And that's really what life all comes down to. You know, Rav Gamliel always wanted to free his slave, Tavi, but he couldn't, you know. He knocked out his eye, but he didn't have aid. It was just a rough thing. And finally, one time they needed him for minions. Ah, he was able to free him. So that's a major consideration. My son, Moshe Yehuda, was once flown to Europe by a particular well-to-do person who was going to Europe, and he wanted to make sure he had a minion. So he flew a minion along with him so that he would always have a minion. I have to say, that's always been one of my dreams, is to have enough money that I can keep 9 people on salary, that when I send out a message, I'm ready to daven, they have to be here in 15 minutes. I don't care what you do the rest of your time, but you're on call for me. I daven whenever I will like to daven, and you're here, and I'll pay you a full salary. It's not a problem, but that's your job. Somebody told me once that his father hired this yeshiva guy to be his driver. And, you know, he says, whenever I need to drive someplace, I'll call you. And the rest of the time, you can sit and learn. So pretty good, huh? I remember I went to put in a new radio in my car because my radio had died. And I went to this place called Sleel Radio. And they said it'll take a couple hours to install it. And so the next thing, he says, but if you want, you can go up to the base medrash. I said, what? They have a base medrash upstairs, you know, a little coil. So, That's the way I like to install my car radio while I'm sitting in Kailo. So that's great. So Baruch Hashem, he's joined the community of Klal Yisrael. And I want to speak about bar mitzvah because it's an interesting thing. I get every now and then emails from people who say, my son is becoming bar mitzvah. Could you make him a little video? And I always say yes. And then I immediately forget. And sometimes they forget to write me back. And then I find the email like a month later. I'm like, oh my gosh, I guess I missed this one, you know. And some people understand my limitations and they just write again and again until I finally hop, oh, I better do this right now. And it's always nice. And I have certain things that I tend to say. And I'll tell you one idea that I like to say. And I want to talk a little bit about this idea of becoming a bar mitzvah. One of the things I say is just before your bar mitzvah, you understand that you are pure evil. What do I mean by that? That when you're born, you get your Yetzer. Rashi tells us this. Right? As soon as you're born, it's chet is crouching by the Pesach. And as soon as a person comes out into the world, they get the Yetzer. You don't get your Yetzer Tov until you're 13, which means there's nothing in this world as evil as a small child. Now, so when you become 13, now you have an opportunity. You get your Yetzer Tov, you have an opportunity to become a good person. So how do we understand this? Because we know not every child is Damien from The Omen, you know what I mean? Not every child is evil in that sense. Well, what does it mean? When we say your Yetzer Hara says, give in to yourself. Fill your desires. Now, if you're hungry, eat. If you're tired, sleep. If you want something, take it. And little children do that. They take other people's things. They don't think of it as stealing. In their mind, they want it, and so it should be theirs. Because little children are completely self-centered. That's why when a little kid is embarrassed of something, they go like this and say, you can't see me. The assumption being that since I can't see you, you can't see me, because the only thing in the world is me. That's a sense of egocentrism where you don't think there's anything in the world but you. And so you need to have your needs met, and I don't really care about anybody else. And so little kids don't care that mommy's on the phone. Mommy, mommy, mommy. 1 second, I'm on the phone. Yeah, but I have to ask you something now. Mommy, mommy. And if you wait a few minutes, I go, what? Now I forgot. I get very angry. Because why weren't you there for me when I needed you right now? We're not able to understand anything else. But we see little kids do good things, yes. Because it's the same way you train a puppy. You give them a little treat. You do something, you know, they get an immediate reward. So maybe they'll get praise, or maybe they'll get this. But they're not doing it for altruistic reasons. They're not doing it because they want to do something good. They're doing it because they're going to get a praise, or they're going to get a prize, or they're going to get something. When you become 13, you now have the opportunity to be good, which means to step outside of yourself and see other people. That's how the Torah defines Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayigdal, he became big, and he went to look at his brothers. That's a sign of maturity. When I'm not looking at it from my own point of view, I'm looking at it from your point of view. That's a very powerful thing. Can you step outside of yourself? Can you see the world from others, through the eyes of others and other people's perspective? Can I be as concerned for you as I am for myself? Now, an interesting thing that when you become bar mitzvah, although based in shamata can give you the death penalty, it's difficult to do, but if you meet all the requirements, very hard to do. And you meet all the requirements to get the death penalty, they can give you misa. Kadosh Baruch Hu won't. If you do something to chayav misa, Kadosh Baruch Hu won't do it until you're 20. Why? Because in between 13 and 20, you are what's called a teenager. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu knows that a teenager is crazy. And I mean this from a physiological point of view. They are crazy. Their reactions, studies have been done that these people are crazy. There's a reason their insurance is higher than everybody else. Because their sense of risk-taking, of thrill, of all kinds of things, it's unstable. They're in a very unstable stage. That's why in Judaism, we don't send you out to the army till you're 20, because you're not stable. You have to wait till you're able to establish a sense of equilibrium. Now, what does that mean? That means since I've spent my whole life being selfish and self-centered, what we call evil, Ra, you only have a Yetzer Ra, now you have a Yetzer Tov, you have to make a balance between it. So as we know, everything in the physical world is a reflection of something that's real in the spiritual world. So the reason you have two eyes, the reason that your nose is shaped like a shin, the fact that hair grows on your head and under your arms, all of these things are significant. They reflect spiritual realities in the physical world. That's why Avraham Avinu was able to figure out the entire Torah by looking at the physical world. It's because Baruch Hu Stalka V'Raisu Bra Alma, he looked in the Torah and created the world. So everything is based on that. It's a reality here. Why are we teenagers? Isn't that a terrible thing? A terrible thing. The guys who made Airplane, which was a very funny movie that came out in 1977. I happened to be in LA when it came out. I remember it. I didn't always have the spiritual greatness that I have today. I went through a period. Anyway, these people were crazy, and they came out with a couple of other crazy movies. And one of them was called Top Secret, I Spy. I'm trying to remember what it was called now. It was some takeoff on all the spy movies, you know. Anyway, the guy is like tied up you know, chained up, and they're beating him. These two goons are like beating him, you know, and he passes out, and he suddenly sees himself in high school again. And his friend says to him, "So did you study for the math test?" He goes, "I didn't know there was a test today. Oh my gosh, what am I going to do yet?" And he wakes back up and he sees these two goons beating him. And he says, "Oh good, I thought I was back in high school." I mean, such an impression on me, you know, that being a teenager is just terrible. It's terrible. And it's not only challenging. There was a Broadway play called Chorus Line, and they all sing about what it was to be a teenager. It's called Hello 12, Hello 13, Hello Love. Yeah. So I don't remember all the words, but it was something along the lines of like, it's a mess. It's a mess. Time to grow. Time to go. Adolesce. Too old to, too young to take over. Too old to ignore. Gee, I'm almost ready. But what for? It's a very hard time. But besides that, are all the weird things that happen to you. You sometimes have these kids who are like in Miami Pirche or one of the other Pirches, you know, and they're like, little sailor suits and stuff. And then at some point it's like, their voice starts to change, and there is no guarantee that when you're done, you're going to come out as Shweki or Ari Goldwag, all these people who went to Miami Boys Choir and then developed into real singers. Yeah, it might not happen to you. So the fact that a person can go through this, it's very difficult. Your voice starts changing, yeah. And then, of course, since there are gallons of hormones pumping through your body, because we have to take a person who's essentially a child and turn them into an adult very quickly, and everything, nothing grows at the same time. You know, you go to sleep and you wake up and suddenly your legs are enormously long and totally out of proportion of the rest of your body, you know, where your arms just start hanging down like a Neanderthal, you know. It's just terrible. And then, of course, acne. What a great idea that was, you know. And people's faces start breaking out, you know. Gosh, I didn't have terrible acne, but, you know, every now and then you would get one of those little pimples right by your hairline, you know. And it was usually when you didn't want one. Every now and then, well, who cares, you know. But, you know, you get one right on your nose. And some little kid says, "You look like a witch." And it's a very rough time until you can establish equilibrium. Now, the reason that's happening to you in the physical world is because it's reflecting a spiritual reality. The spiritual reality is that you are a milchama with yourself. Because the part of you that has been selfish and self-centered and nasty, and the part of you that wants to be great and good, are at war. They're fighting with each other. And that's why, going back to when I was a teenager, I was able to daven on a level that I've never been able to do since. There's a fire and excitement. And just like teenagers are capable of doing some of the most wonderful things, they're also capable of doing some of the most horrible things, like really mean stuff. Bullying and nasty and all, you know. And part of that is, of course, they're going through this terrible milchama. So, you know, you have children and they suddenly become teenagers and you tell them something and they say, "Why? Why am I doing that? What are you talking about that? Why?" And they start screaming. You're like, "Why are you screaming?" "I don't know why, okay? Okay, you're happy? You're happy?" They go to their room and they slam their door twice, you know. And the parents are like, "What happened here?" They are at a loss because it doesn't make any sense. But the answer is they themselves don't know why. They're in emotional and physical turmoil. And the reason is because they are in spiritual turmoil. They are trying to find an equilibrium. And it's a process. It's a process. Rabbi Kalish, who, as I've mentioned many times, is one of the master mechanicim of our generation. He always tells the guys, respect the process. It's a process. Things don't happen overnight. Or as I've quoted my wife many times, I feel like girls' high schools only want girls who don't need high school. You're supposed to be perfect when you get there. And there's no concept of growth. Give people an opportunity to grow up and become somebody else. In Israel, we don't have high schools. We have yeshiva katana. Yeshiva katana is a yeshiva gadola, only smaller. So there's smaller people and smaller chairs and smaller hats and smaller jackets and smaller gemaras and the teeny tiny lady in the teeny tiny house. And the teeny. But otherwise, it's the same exact program. There's no attempt to take these people and develop them into adults. I think that's a tragedy. People need to have that opportunity to grow up. But I think what's extremely important, and that's the idea of bar mitzvah. There's an old story with the Satmar Rebbe, Rabbi Yoel. Someone asked, who should get the maftir? If there's a chassan or a bar mitzvah boy, who should get it? And he said, whichever one is older. What does that mean? That means in the good old days when men were men and women were women and rebbes were rebbes, yeah, people got married at their bar mitzvah. In Europe, it was not unusual. You see a 13-year-old get married? Yeah, sure. It makes life much easier if you go through high school married. Yeah, have to deal with all that pressure, you know. But it's a sense that a 13-year-old in the Torah's eyes is viewed as an adult to the point that they're responsible for their actions. They're counted in a minyan. They're considered a member of the community. Yes, we understand he still needs to do some growing up. But at this point, he's an adult. The Gemara says that a father is obligated to take care of his children until they're old enough to support themselves. Says the Gemara, 5. If they're a little slow, 6. And then you say, son, it's time for you to make it on your own. Good luck. Anyway, when I tell this to people, they are horrified. They said, well, it's different today. I said, yeah, now it's more like 45. Yeah. That's only because you're hoping for a Yerusha by that point. To have to try to make it on your own? And be responsible? Yeah. I read an article in the New York Times in the 1980s. I lived in America in the 1980s. I probably got the New York Times. You know, that was still when there was some news in it. Anyway, there was an op-ed piece that was written by this woman who had gone with her boyfriend to see a movie called Big, starring Tom Hanks. And the premise was that he was a 13-year-old boy who wished to be big, and he suddenly, you know, wakes up and he's 30, and he has to go out in the world and then get a job and manage everything like this. Anyway, he gets involved with this woman at work. And he really has no idea how to handle this. And at one point he says, look, I'm just a 13-year-old boy. And the girl writes, goes, my boyfriend started laughing hysterically, as did all the men in the theater. Not the women so much. He says, because to a man, they're still little boys. There's not even a desire to grow up and to be big. Yeah. Dave Barry, who was a humorist out of the Miami Herald, he wrote a book called Dave Barry Turns 40. He wrote another book called Dave Barry Turns 50. That was, at that point, he gave up. But in Dave Barry Turns 40, he says a line that is profound. He says, now that you're 40, you realize that you have more in common with Ward and June than you do with the beaver. Okay, for those of you who have no idea what that reference means, there was a TV show at the beginning of the 1960s, I think, called Leave It to Beaver, about this eight-year-old boy, and his parents were called Ward and June. I wouldn't have known that, but I read in the article. And what this fellow is saying is, now that I'm 40, I have to begin to come to grips with the fact that I'm not an eight-year-old boy, because until then it was push it. Rabbi Chait, he was one of the people to approve students for the master's program in Yeshiva University when he was there. And he said very often people would come to get their master's because they didn't know what else to do. Otherwise, they'd have to go out to the world. This way I can stay in academia and it's safe. I go to school. And you know, there are people like this, they're just always going to school, get another degree, get another certification, get another. But they're not doing anything. They're not going out to do things. When you're 13 years old, the Torah says, okay, now you're an adult and you have an obligation to go out and do something in this world. You're an adult. Okay, you need some maturing to do. But the fact that a person in his 30s still sees himself as a kid in the secular world, and I have to say to a limited extent in the firm world, there's an idea of someone in their 20s is too young to get married. You have to wait to get older. But I hear this from firm people too. I don't want to run away and get married. I want to enjoy my life. I always think that's so profound. I want to enjoy my life. I got things I want to do. I want to travel. I have the, you know... Because if I get married, love and marriage, love and marriage, yeah, goes together like a horse and carriage. Dun, 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 dun. I forgot the words, but somewhere in there, there's a baby carriage. you know, that's then you get married and you have children and you build a home and you take responsibility. And that was always a value. My parents, they got married, and their goal was to have Jewish children, bring them up where they weren't from, to have Jewish children, bring them up as Jewish kids, get a home, raise the children to be responsible adults. I mean, that was, it wasn't go out and find your own personal happiness and fulfillment. It was to do something in this world. And the fact that people, you know, don't appreciate a sense of responsibility. I'm in this world to do something. I'm in this world to build something. It's not about me. I used to say this when it came to marriage. It's not about me and it's not about you. It's about us doing something together. And we're doing this as a team to build a home and raise the children and bring them up. And that's it. And each one of us understands that it has a role. And it's not about me. Constant self-assurance, which I believe is a sign of immaturity. The husband comes to the wife and says, did you see I changed the light bulb over there in the hall? I changed it. And the wife says, did you see I did the dishes? Did you notice? Did you? You know? Now, I'm not talking about that we shouldn't express appreciation. That's a wonderful thing to do. But what do I need that for? Why aren't I doing what I'm doing? Because I know it's worthwhile and a good thing to do. I've told this story before, but it's, you know, Rabbi Sheinberg, when he was living in New York, happened to be a very good baseball player. He was actually offered a position in the minor leagues. And they thought he would spend some time there and then end up in the major leagues. He was a great pitcher. He was known as Lefty Sheinberg. I still know people from, I met people from Torah Vadaz who knew him there. And he was like, yeah, Lefty Sheinberg. But he instead decided to go to Europe, alone in the mirror. He was coming from New York, and he was going to the mirror. They didn't have flush toilets; they had outhouses and everything that went with that. And someone told the Chafetz Chaim, "Did you hear there was this Americanische Bocher? And he gave up New York and he came to Europe to sit and learn in these very difficult Spartan conditions." Chafetz Chaim said, "So that's what he's supposed to do." And when Schoenberg heard this story, he loved it. He would tell it all the time. He says, "Yeah, yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. Not I need a pat on the back. I need a big thank you. Rebbe, did you see I came to davening this morning?" "Yeah, it's very good." You know what I'm saying? There's a sense of appreciation that I'm supposed to be an adult and I'm supposed to take responsibility. I feel like I told this story just recently. If so, you'll indulge me. But when I was a mashkiach during a particularly dark period of my life, there was this one kid who was much more mature than everybody else I know, because he kept telling me how much more mature he was. One time he was complaining to me, and I said, maturity means taking responsibility. And, davening starts at 7:15 and you don't get out of bed till 11, sometimes 12. So I don't know why you think you're mature. And without missing a beat, he said, "Maybe you should be asking yourself why you can't motivate me to get up in the morning. Because at the end of the day, this is your failure, Rabbi, isn't it?" Nobody wants to be an adult. Take responsibility. Do what I'm supposed to do because that's what you're supposed to do. I remember seeing a sign in a store once says, "We have a new incentive program. Work and don't get fired." My father couldn't understand this. You get up in the morning, you go to work. You have to. An obligation. Complain. You do what you have to do. So when a person turns 13, we say, "You're now an adult." Do you have challenges and issues? Of course you do. I remember hearing the Novominsky Rebbe speak once. He says, "I meet people today, they say they have issues. I remember when people had problems. Now we have issues." But the challenges that people, yes, you don't have your Yetzer HaTov that long. Things are going to be hard, but if you plan ahead, and that's what people do. Ezu Chacham Arayas Anoilad. Who's smart? Someone who sees the future. By contrast, who's stupid? Someone who doesn't see the future. Someone who doesn't appreciate that their actions have consequences. And that's one of the big problems with teenagers, is they don't understand that there are consequences to our actions. I had one of my daughters once, and she was in Beis Yaakov, and they wanted her to wear a particular type of skirt, and she didn't want to wear the skirt. And she said, "I don't care. I'm not going to wear it. Let them throw me out." I said, "Okay, let's play this through. They throw you out. Now you're on the street. No other school will take you because you get thrown out, What's your life going to end up? What are you going to do about schooling? How are you going to get an education? Who are you going to marry? I don't care. I won't wear that skirt." And it's very narrow. Yeah, you have to be able to see it as consequences. So Rav Ganz, when his son was becoming bar mitzvah, so he brought him to the stipler to get a bracha. And the stipler says, "What can I do for you?" He says, "Oh, a bracha that my son should be a talmid chacham." So he looks at the kid and says, "Bracha, very nice. But what's your plan? How are you going to become a talmid chacham?" So this poor little kid is sitting there with the stipler, is trying to figure out. He says, "Listen to me closely." He says, "You have to sleep for 8 hours a night, or 7 hours a night and take a nap during the day." Yeah. He says, "You need time to eat, you need time to shower, you need time to daven, you need this. You're left, bonagid, with 12 hours a day." Yeah. He says, "You learn for 12 hours a day from now until you're 20, and I guarantee you, you'll be a talmid chacham. But in order to do that, you have to see ahead." And that's something that, unfortunately, teenagers are very bad at doing. They're very bad at looking ahead and seeing the consequences of what we're doing and how it's going to affect me. Because otherwise they would take different choices. And that's why I've told the story before, I'm sure. I was a girl in Shunabet Seminary, and she says, I don't know if I want to be from anymore. I said, okay, what's next year going to look like? Very easy. The year after that, it was very easy. What happens when you're 30? Okay. 40? 50? She says, I don't like the way this is turning out. Now let's keep going. 60? 70? 80? She says, what's the question I have to be from? But nobody wants to look ahead. They want to just look at the next thing. What happens when I'm 70? Must come a time, 70. When you're old and it's cold and who cares if you live or you die? Right? Oliver. So, but you're not looking ahead. I just have the next decision. And that's what the Yetzer Hara wants you to do, not to look ahead. But once you're 13, the Torah says to you, now you're a man. I remember my bar mitzvah was in the East Meadow Jewish Center, Conservative Synagogue. They give you a mimeograph sheet, stand in front of the ark. Heavenly Father, today I am a man. You know what I'm saying? No, not so much. The bar mitzvah kids have to stand on a box to be able to reach the... the Torah, hard to take them seriously. My son, by his bar mitzvah, he was already well developed. I remember I went into a store in Gula and said, I want to buy a bar mitzvah suit. And he looks at my son and goes, he pulls out this tiny little suit, goes, this is a bar mitzvah suit. Let's go to the big men's section. I was surprised. But, but you see some of these bar mitzvah people, they're like, an extra in the Wizard of Oz, what happened over here, But the Torah says, now you're an adult and you can make decisions about your future. Now you can take responsibility for Klal Yisrael. Isn't that an amazing thing? And that's the sign of an adult. Moshe Rabbeinu looks and he sees the suffering of his people, and that's called a bar mitzvah. That's called becoming an adult. When you look and you say, okay, I'm looking outside of myself and I'm looking at other people. I understand that my actions have consequences and the decisions that I make are going to have ramifications way beyond me. And that's why people don't want to look ahead. I'll just look at the next thing I'm going to do. And that's the surefire sign of immaturity. It's impulsive. Everyone knows the famous test that they did where they gave these little kids a marshmallow and they said, you could eat it now, but if you wait 10 minutes, I'll give you another marshmallow and you'll have two. So some kids ate it right away and some people waited. And they tracked these kids through life. And the first group were never successful. And the second group were very successful because they understood there's something called delayed gratification. If you wait, you'll get something better. But you have to think about it. Should I just take it now, or should I, you have to consider these things. As Jerry Seinfeld said, I went to buy some medicine. This one's fast acting, but this one's long lasting. When do I want to feel better, now or later? And that's the idea, When you become a bar mitzvah, it means you're not just being a little kid who needs their needs met immediately. I can have delayed gratification. I can think ahead. That's when you become a chayiv to fast, right? Now you fast. What does that mean? It means I'm hungry. Yes, you are. That's sort of the definition of a fast day. There's nothing for you to eat. You're delaying it. You have to put it off. It's not just what do I want to do now. You have to get up in the morning. had a friend of mine who was a Rosh Hashiva who was staying at my house once with one of his sons. And he was taking a Shabbos nap, and he goes in and wakes him up. I didn't think it was a very long nap. And I said, you're waking him up already? He goes, he's a teenager. He'll sleep forever if you let him. Got things to do, places to go. No, can't just hang around, sleep your life away. I need to accomplish things. I need to go someplace. A very important concept. So to Yaakov Hayakar and to his parents, everybody's so proud of you that you're becoming a bar mitzvah, joining Klal Yisrael. And always remember, right, what it means now that you're a bar mitzvah is you're looking out for Klal Yisrael. You are responsible. Go out and look at the suffering of your people. See how you can make it better. Understand what's there. And we're in this world to accomplish something, not to be a child anymore, but to be an adult. Birtz Hashem and Mazel Tov to the Lieberman family. And now, questions. By Anonymous, you mentioned that someone made a highlight video of the first year of the Rabbi Orlovsky show and the second. And I was wondering when you will share it. Sure, I'll put up a link now. Not a problem. That's an easy one. Yeah. Look how easy that is. I've gone to more than one school where the school secretary had a sign above her desk. I don't know. I've seen it in more than one school by the secretary. It says, I can only make one person happy today. Today is not your day. Tomorrow doesn't look good either. So we just made somebody happy. All right. By Anonymous, the Rav has quoted in the past from Moshe Shapiro that now after 9/11 and Milchamas Gog and Magog, Chesed comes before Torah. Quick correction. I heard that from Rav Bullman. How does this work for someone learning in yeshiva? Oh, boy. So you know Rav Moshe Feinstein said that even a yeshiva bacha needs to give Maisa from his time for Klal Yisrael. So what the form takes depends very much on the person, right? Because, you know, I can do a chesed by learning with a younger guy in yeshiva, by helping somebody out, by cleaning up the dira, you know, by, you know, when we're preparing the list of Myra Makomos, I've got the Svarim from me. When I'm done, I go to another Chavrus and say, do you need the Rashba? I have it over here. The opportunities for Chesed are constant, you know, to be able to clear off the table, to be able to, you know, after the meals, to be able to help people out. There's so many opportunities. I'll tell you a story. The Jewish press, which very often bashes people learning in Kollel. And, you know, okay, it's pretty de rigueur already. Why don't these bums go out and get a job? I know the whole speech. But there was one letter that really hurt on a visceral level. It said like this. It says, we have a Kollel in our shul. And when I come in the morning, I see dirty coffee cups all over the table. Nobody put back the svarim. Sometimes they poured themselves some cereal and it spilled. They didn't bother cleaning it up. Sometimes they don't bother putting the milk back in the fridge. I'm afraid that the Kollel lifestyle has given people a sense of entitlement that they don't feel like they have to care about anybody but themselves. That hurt because I know what they're talking about. You know, people just knock Limud Torah. Okay, I'm not impressed, but in Kelm, they used to auction off the right to sweep the base medrash. Schus. Yeah. There are opportunities that surround us all the time. Yeah. I've told this story before. There was a mashgiach who left a chair in the doorway. You know, the door was open and he left a chair there. And everybody pushed their way around the chair, yeah. You know? And After everyone was sitting learning, Mashgiach gives a little clap. He says, Rabbi, say, what are we learning? Baba Kama. So what perek? First perek. What sugya? Poor Bereshus HaRabim. So he says, how could you see a Bor Bereshus HaRabim? You see an obstacle in everyone's way and you don't remove it. Look how easy it is. When I was learning by Tzvi Kushalevsky, so they did a big sponge in the Beis Medrash and they moved all the benches down and they stacked all of the shtenders on top of it. So the first people who came in to learn, you couldn't learn. So they started setting up the Beis Medrash. Right? Now, some people are better at this and some people are worse, you know. I know there's this one fellow who who married a Rosh Hashiva's daughter. And he saw people working and goes, hey, I could do this too. And he starts to move one of the benches and the shtenders topple over and he goes, ah, forget it, I can't do this. I said, just remember why Yehoshua took over for Moshe Rabbeinu. The Chazal say because he set up the chairs in the Beis Medrash, not because he married Moshe Rabbeinu's daughter. I thought that was such a clever line on my part. But anyway, the point is that, you know, to take care of it, I try when I'm leaving the Beis Medrash, I go around and I collect the dirty coffee cups. How does a person go and make themselves a coffee and leave it on the table in the Beis Medrash? How do you leave dirty tissues on the tables or on the floor? Take it, throw it out. You take it and drop it on the floor. I'll try to collect. I try to do that as much as I can. When I go to put my siddur back, I collect as many siddurim as I can and take them with me. They're all hanging around anyway. All of their people didn't bother putting them back. I'm going there anyway. You have no idea how many opportunities there are for chesed. And remember that saying good morning, putting a smile on your face, you know, nos be'olam chavero. Going over to somebody you see is having a hard time and giving them a few kind words. I mean, there's so many opportunities to be able to do chesed in our lives. We don't even realize it. I remember when I was in Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim had a principle that you were not allowed to use the tissues in the bathroom for your nose, only for its original intended purpose. So you had to go out and buy yourself your own tissues. I never understood this, but okay. That was their principle. And so people had to have their own tissues. But sometimes if you don't have your package of tissues and your nose is literally dripping, not figuratively, literally dripping, what are you supposed to do? So you go around and you see boxes of tissues and they all write Makbid on them. So I have a friend who is now part of the Tzevet in Chafetz Chaim. His name is Reverend Nachum Diamond. And I one time needed a tissue, and I see a box of tissues, and I see something written on it, and I was like, well, of course, you know. And it says, Mutal Akol. So first I blew my nose. And then I went over to him, and I said, Menachem, And he says, listen, how many tissues are they going to take from me? Let's say I have to buy boxes every few days. It's not going to break me, but it's a chesed. Back in the old days when there were phone cards, for those of you, there used to be these things called public phones. So in Israel, there used to be asimonim, which were these little like tokens that you had to put in to make a phone call. Yeah. And then they went up to cards. There were cards that had X number of clicks on them and you would stick in the card. And as you were talking, the clicks would run down till it ran out. So one time a guy needed a phone card and he says to someone, can I borrow your phone card? He says, sure. Gives him the phone card. He makes a call. He says, how much do I owe you? He says, nothing. He says, no, I want to pay you. Because he pulls out another one. He says, this is my phone card. This is my chesed phone card. I bought this for my tzedakah money so that if anybody ever needs a phone card, I can give him a phone card. Like that. My car, more than once, I had a flat tire. And I have to get it to the place to fix it. Here in Israel, we have a Hebrew word for it. It's called a puncturia. I don't know where the source of the word is, but puncturia. Anyway, so there's this organization called Yedidim. You call them up, and at least on two separate occasions, there are people who keep in their car these little instant inflatable things, and they plug it in and they inflate it. No compensation. They carry it around in their car because they want to be able to do a chesed. So you keep certain things on hand that, you know, you're getting one for yourself, get one for the tzibur. And that's opportunities for chesed that go on in yeshiva guy's life. Okay, by anonymous, if someone is allergic to flowers, what's a good alternative? Now, this is obviously a sensitive issue for me because my father was a florist, so there's no alternative. Having said that, there are silk flowers that are just remarkable. They're almost indistinguishable from real flowers. So if you can't handle real flowers, get these, and they're very nice. I've seen them. There are certain chasanas where the people don't want to spend money on florists and pay for flowers. So they're a gemachim where you can rent silk flower centerpieces. And it's a nice thing. So if you want to get your wife something for Shabbos, and she got, to my mind, you know, if you're not allergic, you should spend the money on flowers. I don't think there's anything like real flowers. And to me, it brightens up a room, brightens up life, and there's nothing more beautiful than watching a living thing die. But they're beautiful. I'm a big fan. Like I say, I'm a son of a florist. So I've been called a son of something else, but I'm definitely a son of a florist. So yeah, if you can get real flowers. But if you can't, there are Baruch Hashem. We live in a day and age where there are alternatives. Anonymous, recently pictures have been released from the farthest edges of the galaxy. Why do you think Hashem is allowing this to be seen? So I may have told this story recently. I know I told it in one of my shiurim. Rav Noach Weinberg, he says, I said to my brother, Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, and Rosh Shiva of Neso. And he says, I said to him, Jack, he says, how do we know we're right? And he says, what's your question? He says, how do we know we're right? And he kept saying to me, what's your question? What's your question? And I was getting frustrated. And finally, he helped me. He says, us or who? So I sat down and I thought about it. And I realized Christianity is not a challenge to me. Islam is not a challenge to me. Shinto is not, you know, Buddhism, Hinduism. I mean, these things, these and that. What's my challenge? Science. He says, okay, science. Yeah. So he says, fine. So I'll give you things to read and we'll talk about it. Yeah. There are physicists who said that the theory of evolution, the purpose of it is to be able to give us an explanation how there could be a world without God. I have an absolutely fascinating book that my nephew Ezra gave me. He was on the podcast doing the Svartis Miras. He's also like a scientist and a super genius and stuff. And I mean, ever since he was a little kid, he used to just like read the encyclopedia from cover to cover. I was like, very smart guy. Anyway, he gave me this book from physicists and scientists discussing the existence of God and how the belief in an all-powerful being is more logical than anything else science has to offer. And so the more we study science, I don't know if we ever talked about this, but the Big Bang Theory was rejected by the majority of scientists until the 1970s when they had no choice. And there was evidence presented. Why? Because the Big Bang Theory, as I once heard Dr. Schroeder say, means that they figured out the first three words of the Bible, in the beginning. Means the universe began. At some point, the universe popped into existence. And now you cannot fall back on what Aristotle said. The universe is eternal. It always was, is, and will be. So I don't need God. Now we know at some point the universe began. So now I have to ask where it came from. So the more we understand the godless of the Bria, the more we understand that this could not have happened by chance. There's a story with Sir Isaac Newton where he made a diorama of the solar system. And someone said, wow, this is unbelievable. Where'd you get this from? He goes, oh, it was the craziest thing. These two cats came in and they started fighting and they were knocked over. You know, I had some string and I had some, wire and they built it. So that's impossible. Something like this couldn't happen by chance. He says, you mean a model of the solar system couldn't happen by chance, but the solar system itself did? So the more we get to understand the Niflaos HaBore, the more we see how unbelievable the universe is, we have to ask ourselves, Elohim is a contraction of two words, Mi Ela. Where does this come from? How does one understand this? What's the existence of the world? And you come to the conclusion it has to be a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the more that we need that chizik, I believe, the more Kodesh Baruch Hu opens up the secrets of the universe to us. And that's it for this episode. If you want to find out more about the show, you can go to my website, rabbiolowski.com. And you can have a question. You can sponsor an episode. You can sponsor a question and answer. You can sponsor a Parsha in 5. You can download our theme song. You can sign up for one of our online shiurim. And that's it for now. Until next time, I am David Orlovsky, and this has been the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.
It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. The Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Knowledge and wisdom will help you grow. Lots of fun in every episode. And we don't have to rhyme. No, we don't. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show on RabbiOrlovsky.com. Torah, anytime, YouTube, and more. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Torah and Simcha, ready to go. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. Till next time, till we meet again. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show. It's the Rabbi Orlovsky Show.